Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am a very distraught white woman, Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I will probably be the cause of the next witch trials. I'm Siren Rex Fry, and this is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture.
And I'm the crispy bottle blonde wig left for dead in the wardrobe department. I'm Beth.
Oh my God, Beth, let's talk about you.
Yes, we're so excited that Beth is here with us today.
So yeah, I am the owner and founder and creatrix of Fundamental Magic, and we make candles for witches. And I have been practicing witchcraft since the 80s, and I have been making and selling witchy items online since the early 2000s. And now I'm making candles for badass witches.
Hell yeah. Yeah, she is. And you will get to hear a lot about those candles toward the middle of the episode. We have a little something special for you there. So really, you know, Beth reached out to us and kind of offered us a partnership. And I feel like the three of us have really hit it off. I've loved all the conversations we've had with you so far. You know, it's something we really care about at Witch Bitches Review to be partnering with like other small businesses run by witches and queer people. We love that. And I think the best way to start is having you on the episode. I think you're going to have a lot of opinions about this episode, and I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here too. I'm glad that I can share my opinions with others.
It's such an honor to have you here. We appreciate your support so much. You've been such a cheerleader for the pod. And we're just really excited for you to be here in the episode with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Stay tuned at the end of the episode for an original spell written by us based on the themes explored in this podcast.
Which is a new segment that we're doing that I'm so excited about. And we meant to start it last episode, but we forgot. So it starts today.
Alrighty. So today we're discussing Charmed, Season 2, Episode 2, Morality Bites.
Okay, well, I'm just going to drown you all out with a slew of information right now. Check this out. The title is apparently a reference to the 1994 film Reality Bites. I've never seen this movie, but the description sounds pretty good. And also, like, it has nothing to do with this episode. Okay. However, I actually think it's an okay title because the episode is kind of a morality play, and I want to talk a little bit about what that means. Because I feel like they built this theme into the episode title, so I feel like they're trying to do all of this on purpose, I think. So, the term morality play refers to plays performed in medieval times where a protagonist is tempted to amoral or sinful deeds, and the play revolves around exploring the ethics and consequences of giving in to amoral behavior. These plays often feature divine beings like angels and demons as characters, as well as personified moral concepts like virtue and vice. I think using the term morality play as a genre outside of the 18th century can be helpful, though. The Last Temptation of Christ is a morality play, as well as several other stories in the Bible. But really, every supernatural show explores this kind of story at least once. And other pieces of media, such as Will and Grace and The Golden Girls and God knows how many others, just deal with it almost every week. The Good Place is four straight seasons of morality play served with slapstick humor. So these kinds of stories are asking us, what is right and wrong? What are the consequences of doing something wrong, and how much do we care? What does society tell us is moral, and what does and does our own conscience agree? Morality plays explore all of this, and in so doing, have created a historical record of the evolution of human values that we can consume through entertainment. I think that's pretty fucking cool. So this episode is going to tell us about the morals of witchcraft according to this show. And the big question is, are these three actual witches going to agree?
I don't think so.
Do you have a premonition, Beth? Do you agree with the morals set aside in this episode?
I don't know. My moral compass is pretty skewed, so I'm probably not the best source for asking a about that. So.
Good. Well, that's like that's a pre-qualification to get on the show, Beth.
Yeah, no, I agreed with Phoebe. Like, I didn't see anything wrong with
your morals are compromised.
Honestly.
Yeah.
But then it gets into heavy subject matter, like morality versus justice versus ethics versus norm. You know, I mean, they're all the same but different. Mm-hmm. So,
but they're all intertwined with each other from a very privileged perspective, which is something that, like, in the modern lens, we have to take into account, which I'm sure we'll talk about in depth later. According to IMDb, this episode rated 8.4 out of 10 and is the one where Phoebe has a vivid premonition foretelling her own death, burned at the stake for killing a man with her powers in the year 2009, so far in the future.
Where's our flying car?
To prevent her...
Year 2009?
To prevent her execution, the sisters travel to the future. This episode originally...
The future, which is currently... Also the past.
The future, which is also currently the past. This episode originally aired on October 7th, 1999, which is the past, and was written by Chris Levinson and Zach Estrin, and directed by John Baring.
So if this episode was made today, they would travel to, 2033.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That doesn't seem like a real number.
No. So... This is very much like a hexing commentary and Baneful Magic and We Are Good Witches episode. I think it's very much in the same vein as like Brokeback Brendan, as I prefer to call that episode.
Well, you know, so I've been listening to the House of Halliwell podcast. They're almost done with season one, you know, which is Drew Fuller, Holly Marie Combs, and Brian Krause talking about their experiences being on the show. And they're interviewing a lot of like the guest cast too. And one thing they keep harping on, Holly just keeps saying over and over again that they were getting like constant criticism and pushback from all sorts of sources, and their best way to deal with it was to try to make these episodes that really cemented the fact that they're quote unquote good witches, that it's okay for normal people to like this show, that it's not subversive. Which I guess is where we all fundamentally disagree, because I think for the three of us, witchcraft is subversive.
Yeah, I think that, like...
That's the whole point of witchcraft.
Exactly!
I mean, witchcraft by its nature is, like, a political statement and position.
Yes,
and
very much
so. Yeah, I think that, like... I don't know.
And I feel like it's really... Yeah, it's this point is the place where we always come to disagreements. Like, we love the way everything looks, but when we get into the themes, it's always this law and order, mainstream society kind of bullshit, and that's where we always disagree.
Dun, dun.
Yeah.
Any excuse to sing terribly, I swear.
Excuse.
Yeah, this episode, I mean, I think this is a really heavy... They deal with... There's layers here in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it deals with some really heavy subject matter, you know, like the idea of what is morality. Also, I think there's a lot of misogyny in this episode.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of hatred of the other, you know, I mean, in pop culture, and I'm sure you guys would agree, witches are predominantly showcased as female presenting, mm-hmm. right? And are used as... Yeah, used as a substitute or an allegory for the other,
mm-hmm.
right?
Often. Like, yes,
yeah.
Whether that is, you know, people in the LGBTQ community or minorities, women, obviously, and, you know, anything that's other.
Yeah, they're the social outcasts, and you can paste whatever other label on that you want. That's what they're representing, right?
Exactly. And I think it gives, you know, and because of that, witches in general, I mean, still to the 2023, you know, I mean, I know that and you guys too, you know, like, I worry that there are certain people that would be happy to drag us behind a truck for our beliefs and our practices, you know, mm-hmm. and it's scary. It's a scary thing to think that's still happening, and not just for witches, for all kinds of different people. And I think this episode really touches on a lot of that. So even though it was in the past and the future in the past, it's still very relevant today, sadly.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think this episode is super relevant today, and that's sort of why I went so in-depth with what a morality play means, because in essence, they're timeless. Like, we can talk about the things that we see on screen that kind of create a temporal setting for us, but the values, the struggles, the right and wrong stuff is timeless. Yeah. And yes. So that by itself, I think, makes the episode still really relevant. But sure. This episode has the added layer of, like, government oppression, you know?
That's a little too real.
Yeah.
Too real sometimes.
So, I mean, there's lots of themes that we can get into as we explore the episode. Should we start the scene by scene here?
Let's do it.
All right. So the episode opens with Piper entering the manor, smelling the high heaven because she stepped in some jerk's dog shit. And the sisters are all like, how dare you not pick up your poop? Which is fair, but like, maybe chill, like a little.
They're very upset, but I guess it's a pattern.
Overreacting.
Or whatever. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, you know, yeah. I've owned a dog, so like dog shit everywhere, I guess, just doesn't like super bother me. I just don't step in it is what I do.
Yeah, like watch where you're fucking going.
But she had to hold her like paper bag, shopping bags at eye level over her face so that she could be mad at the dog. Because Piper always creates her own problems. Am I right?
Yes, she absolutely does.
You're right. You are correct. Yes. Yes. That's why I empathize with her so much.
You identify with her so much?
Yeah, I like to create my own problems. So.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you've been cast as Piper. And,
yeah, it works out.
Well, something we have coming up. Yeah, so, you know, Piper's pissed about the shit on her shoes. We hear a dog barking, and the sisters decide to use magic to fuck this guy up.
Drama. Talent. Suffering. This is a dramatic reenactment, and we are sorry.
That man is gonna let his dog just shit in front of our house?
That is so rude. I think I'll kill him.
Prue, you always take things too far. But yeah, let's use our magic to kick his ass.
Shing! Shing! Thump, 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 thump. Sparkle noise!
Oh my god, Prue, you threw shit? You threw it? Like a chimpanzee? You threw shit at that man. You nasty bitch.
Prue, that was fucking disgusting.
Whatever. At least I didn't kill him.
Thank God that's over.
So, Phoebe rewards herself with 15 minutes of television.
Whereas I have the television on all the time to staff off the crushing weight of loneliness.
So, Phoebe sees this commercial of Cal Green, this dickwad baseball player, after the deal with the dog shit guy. So remember that. The dog shit guy is important.
Dog shit guy. Yeah.
Dog shit guy. Fucking Mike Pence.
Mike Pence, yes. Dog shit guy. Fuck him. He's Mike fucking Pence. He probably calls his dog mother.
She then has a premonition of her being burned at the stake on February 26, 2009, in the past. And I find that to be just a little bit dramatic.
It's a little dramatic. It's so nice that her premonition has like the date slapped across the screen. How
handy. It's so convenient.
Yeah, you know? Like, whew.
I was watching TV, and then I had a premonition of myself on TV. Then we have the opening credits, which is just like a really shitty place to throw in how soon is now, but whatever. What's the song that plays after the credits siren?
I can tell you that it's called Tales of the Sun, and that I forgot to write down who sings it, and also that I don't care that much. Like, listen, I know I'm supposed to talk about this song every time, but like, I only care about the good ones, you know?
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Sure. And Beth, at any point, if you want to help with the scene by scene, like, do you want us to tap you in at some points? Okay, well, I'll do this thing because I wrote a bunch of shit, but then you can go next. in the beginning and ending of this episode, when we're in the quote-unquote present, the sisters all have their hair up, and they are all wearing way, way too much makeup. Piper's highlighter is radioactive, Prue's blush is bordering on a skin rash, and Phoebe's spray tan is so severe that Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory is calling her for a job interview. Like, it's, they look ridiculous, honestly. But there's a reason for all this, so that when they're in the future and they look different, it's a really stark contrast. I think they did that so that we believe they look older, even though they just look normal and have different hair. But I mean, we'll get to their hair, but I do love the hair. I love all the wigs in this episode, and I think putting their hair up when they're not wearing the wigs was a good choice.
Yeah, I think so too.
It makes them look like their hair has aged 10 years, you know, which is what all that really matters.
It was a choice, yes.
The makeup's bad, though. It's, like, really bad.
Yes, the makeup is bad, but I found the choice to be really effective for what it did.
It was. Yeah. It was, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the credits, Piper and Prue are like, huh, maybe we would let you burn the fuck up. And then...
because they did in the vision.
Yeah.
They just watched you die.
Maybe we would watch you die, Phoebes. Maybe it'd be a little bit fun.
Prue spent all of season one trying to kill Phoebe. I don't know why it should be any different.
So
yeah, well, Prue's a killer.
I know. Thank you. Thank you, Beth. Thank you.
Yeah. She's
a murderer.
She's a lady killer, yes.
I want to make a jingle just called Prue is a murderer. I think I just sing it. I think I just say, Prue! Prue is a murderer. I think that's the jingle. It belongs in this episode for sure.
You could use it every time she does an on-screen kill.
From start to finish, this whole episode, all she wants to do is kill somebody.
I empathize with all of them. I empathize with Prue on that as well. I always just want to kill somebody. So
I mean, maybe it should be like a play on Psycho Killer. Just Prudence Killer.
Qu'est-ce que c'est? Yes.
So when Leo shows back up, I was confused as to like what Piper and Leo were. Are they dating? Oh, are they just fucking? What's happening?
Well, I think that this episode is also kind of supposed to make us ask that question. Because the last time we saw Leo, he orbed away, and we don't know if we're ever going to see him again. But then he shows back up, and it's just sort of like they're casually dating.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to leave you alone in your attic whenever I want, but when I want a little crab, maybe I'll show back up.
I guess it's weird because when he shows up, you feel like there's some stuff that's happened in between that we haven't seen. It doesn't feel like this is the next time she's seen him.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's why I felt it was so confusing.
Time has passed between the ending of the first season and you know, this is only the second episode of the second season.
Right.
So there's like, what, a 2-month gap? So... who knows what happened?
Well, we know there was a month between seasons one and two, at least.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, maybe they've seen each other casually between now and then. But the orbing looks so much better this season already.
They got a better budget. They got a better budget.
Yeah, there are some great special effects in this episode alone.
Yes, yeah. They updated their Adobe After Effects. Like, for sure.
Actually, so this episode is skipping ahead, and I'll talk about it when we get to it. But I think this episode has one of the best special effects they ever do.
Oh, I know exactly what you think it is.
And it's good.
It is good. So, yeah, they're going to February 2009, and that feels like an eon ago. Like,
did we already discuss how, like, Leo is the one who's, like, helping them go, though? Did you talk about that part?
Oh, when he went up to the book?
So this is pivotal for me, for my opinion of this episode. Leo is just trying to get laid, you know, on his day off. But then all of a sudden, like, the prudish god people are like, no, actually, instead of having sex, I need you to open the Book of Shadows so that these witches will go to the future. So it's like a setup.
Yeah, the sky doorbell tells him to go upstairs.
The sky doorbell.
Right.
Yes!
Now, does Leo mess with the Book of Shadows a lot? I don't think...
He does not do this very often.
Well, actually, he does this a little bit in this season, because he also is shady behind their backs in episode 4. Because I just watched
that. Yeah, I didn't make me feel good watching him up there with the book. That's almost...
No, so he was like... Well, you know, in the first season, there was a couple of attempts to, like, question his morality or whether he means them harm or not. Sure. And have him doing things behind their backs. And then he's like, oh, no, it's just we're the good guys, and that's why we guide you behind your backs. You know, it's not manipulation or anything.
Right. Well, maybe that goes into the theme of the episode, where we're, like, kind of just planting that seed of questioning Leo's motives and morality and where he stands on the spectrum.
That is very true. It's very true.
Yeah. So I want to bring it up now because I think that the conclusion we arrive at with Leo's character is very wrong. I think, like, Leo is in on something insidious here.
He's like, oh, I didn't know that you were going to get sent to the future and watch your sister die. That wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah, he acts like he knows nothing, but he knows everything. He's such a liar.
Yeah.
He does somewhere. He's a supernatural being who's, like, immortal. Like, how can he not know everything?
I mean, it's not like they don't treat him like a motherfucking encyclopedia for the rest of the show. Like, Jesus Christ.
Well, eventually, not yet. He doesn't know anything yet. He's just sneaky behind their backs and hot right now. Yeah. Later, when he's, like, boyfriend husband material, then he's just basically a human book. Which actually is hot. We've said I care more about books than people.
So they get ready to cast a spell to go to the future, and Piper's more concerned about wrinkles than her sister's death. So that's funny. They sit down at this table and she's like, oh, I wonder how I look. Not like, oh, Phoebe, I wonder what you did to get fucking burned up in with a live audience. I wonder if I need some, like, Olay eye cream in the future. Like,
right.
What the fuck?
I will say that they're, like, they're just very cavalier about this whole thing. They're just like, okay, well, you had this vision, like, 20 minutes ago. Sure, let's cast a spell to time travel.
Yeah, sure, why not? They've time traveled for less.
They, like, they prepare for this adventure in no way at all.
No, they literally go upstairs and just cast whatsoever.
I would be, like, listen... I pack a bag just to, like, leave town.
Yeah. I was going to say, they didn't even bring a snack or anything. Like, one of my fears is having, like, a hunger pain.
They're going 10 years into the future, and they didn't pack a lunch?
Right, or at least, I don't know. And I know they're totally incapable, but at least flip through the Book of Shadows and maybe memorize a few fucking couplets of use. Like,
or write it down on a piece of paper and take it with you. I don't know.
I mean, they don't actually get to take anything with them, but they didn't know that.
No, yeah. They didn't even try. They don't. They know nothing. They know nothing.
They know nothing. Yeah. And it's literally just a spell. The spell does not have any description of how it will work. It's just words they say, and then bam.
And I do like the incantation, and and it's, like, one of the most petition-y spells I think they ever do.
I like the incantation a lot too, and they actually reuse parts of it a lot, but we're not doing misspelled, right?
No.
We cannot do a time travel misspelled again. We can't.
No, we've done that pretty much as much as we can.
I feel like we've done it three times. I'm over it.
But yeah, it's like, also, here's the thing. This event that they're trying to prevent takes place 10 fucking years in the future. They can't wait, like, an hour to talk about what they're going to do, right, to come up with some kind of plan. Like,
they literally have nothing but time, and they rush it, right into it.
Exactly! Like, what the fuck, girls? What the fuck? Why are you being so stupid?
I think that they're being manipulated into doing it. That's my whole deal with this episode.
Who's manipulating them? The elders?
The elders. The sky doorbells.
The sky doorbells, yes.
Why do the elders even need the charmed ones if they're that powerful?
Because they suck. To keep themselves safe. I have a whole theory. The elders, they bogard two things. Wisdom and healing. Yeah. And the witches need both of those things to survive. So the elders will only give them the knowledge and the healing if they do what they say.
Mm-hmm.
That is very manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like some relationships I've had.
Yeah, ew, don't date the elders, Beth.
Someone should tell that to Piper.
They're not even hot.
Well, some of them are.
Well, that may be one. You know the one.
Yeah, so they go forward in time. They cast this spell with a burning piece of paper, which is how I do a lot of my spells, too.
Me, too.
Suddenly, we are in Days of Future Past, February 26, 2009. And they were only like a decade off for voice activation on appliances, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But, I mean, MTV's Real World on the Moon, maybe not
that. Right, they said, yeah, Real World 18 on the Moon. Did anybody look up what the Real World 18 was really like? I bet it was stupid.
Are there even 18 of them?
There's like 20 some, aren't there?
Okay. There are 33. There are 33 seasons of the Real World. Is it still going on? The Real World Denver.
Why?
Was season 18. I can't read about this.
Yeah. The only Real World season I watched was that first one when they were in Chicago. That's the only one I watched because I love seeing my city on TV. So, yeah.
I remember watching The Real World and being completely enamored with the gay men on it. And I was like...
Just the one?
See, that was the thing. The Real World was trash, but it was also some of, like, the first images in America of gay people on television.
Yeah. That's true. Or do you guys remember... Do you remember that MTV show, Next, that dating show?
No.
It was, like, it was this bus, and people would, like... There would be, like, a contestant, right? And then there would be, like, six people on this bus. And the bus would pull up, and each time someone came off of the bus, if the person... that was the contestant didn't like them, they would just say, next, and they have to go to the front to the bus.
Oh my god.
It was basically like Grindr in real life. It was ridiculous.
It was like Tinder in real life. Like, swipe left. No thank you.
But there were gay guys on that all the time, and I remember watching it being like, oh my god, boys can date boys? Why does this make me feel things?
This is off topic, but MTV in general was sort of a pioneer of gay representation on television in the 90s.
Yes.
For sure. Because that was the only channel I had where you could see it.
Back in 2009, I was just kind of coming to terms with my sexuality and...
Well, apparently kind of 13, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a sign. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I came out when I was 14, so I came out in 2010.
Okay.
So I'm actually glad you brought this up, because I did want to ask you guys, like, where were you in 2009?
I was in eighth grade, being fat, awkward, and being really concerned about having wet dreams about men because I thought I was dying.
And you were living in some place called, like, Straightburg or Closetburg.
Yes. Yes, I was.
Something like that.
Something like that.
It was in Hetville.
Well, listen, I went to a Christian school for 11 years, and we had absolutely zero kind of sex ed at all, ever. Mm-hmm. And so when I started going through puberty, I was like, what the fuck is happening to me?
You're dying, clearly.
I thought I had cancer. I was like, what's happening?
I can see that. Yeah, I got 2009. I think I told you guys, I mean, I'm a couple of years older than you, but... I was managing a hot rod shop and riding motorcycles around and living in a house with my ex person. And that's about it. But yeah, I went to Catholic school too. And our sex education back in the 80s was archaic. And when I hit puberty, I still don't know. Like, I had no clue what was going on. So I completely, it's terrifying. Your body starts changing. You're like, what the fuck?
What's happening to me? Yeah.
You can't educate kids about things that actually affect them because it offends your fake sense of morals that you keep in your head.
Oh, that I could go off on a tangent about white supremacy and the right to comfort, but yes, that's definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's
tangents like that are always welcome here.
I mean, I think about like the need for comprehensive sex education in general would solve a lot of problems.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh my god, there's somebody I follow, TikTok. There's people where women with this woman, she goes up to men and asks them questions about female anatomy and biology and they have no fucking clue, you know, as a way to like demonstrate why men should not be making decisions about women's healthcare. And yeah,
it's like,
it's just,
oh, yeah. Well, I know my pee-pee goes in there. And that's
they don't know where there is. They have no clue. It's just, yeah. This country is so puritanical for, you know, it's just so uptight and puritanical in so many ways still. And it's oppressive.
And that's really interesting because I thought that we were off topic, but Beth, you make a good point. We're really not, because this episode is all about how puritanical America is.
Yes.
I mean, it's just like, you know, we've made a lot of strides as like human beings, as animals, but societally, it's really not that different from the 1800s.
I think, well, it's
interesting. Well, I don't know about that, because I am now trapped in a gay marriage. I have to pay more money to get out of. And that wasn't happening in the 1800s.
Yeah, you could be dead.
You say that, I mean, it's interesting. So, like, things in society now, and when I say society, I'm talking about United States of America. You know, and then we talk about the politicians, which there's a lot of parallels in this episode with today's Christo-fascist, you know, kind of thing. I mean, I rocked on here that Nathan Pratt looks like head Republican. And
he is. Now, that's on purpose. Yeah, like, you can't tell me that he's a Democrat. There's no fucking way.
Democrats don't look like that. I mean, well, Democrats might, but leftists don't. And so, you know, I mean, I think, like, at least what's happening politically right now is, like, some sort of desperate attempt by the Nathaniel Pratts of the world to hang on. Because society's already, we've shifted. The shift has happened in many ways. And the politicians are behind on all of that. And there's like this, it's like this desperate attempt to like drag society back to where they want it to be. And it's like, no, we're already moving in this direction. We're not there yet, but the movement has already started and you're being left behind. So I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime, but I feel that the Nathaniel Pratts of the world will be powerless eventually, because fascism never wins. It never wins.
So we have gone to the future and we realize now that Piper's worries about her wrinkles were actually valid, because she is inside her future body. And I'm sure she's like waking up off the couch like, God damn, why do my knees hurt so bad?
So they were expecting to see their future selves and be kind of in the background, but instead they've astral projected into their future bodies.
Yeah, which is like different than the time traveling we've seen before.
True.
Where they're like paralleled with themselves.
Like some Freaky Friday shit.
Yeah, it really is.
Actually how Phoebe's premonition power will start to work in the future.
Yeah. So we find out that Piper has an ugly little daughter.
Oh my God, you're so mean. I mean, I don't like that kid especially, but she's not ugly. Good Lord.
Look at her outfit.
Okay, well, her outfit is horrible, and nobody was dressing like that in 2009. But, you know, they just don't know.
No, she needed a big puffy hat.
You know what? I will say that daughter looked like she was living in the 90s, not 2009, for sure. Did they get fashion forward at all, really? Like, I don't think...
Piper had that crossing guard thing on her shirt.
Yes, she did.
Well, of course, apparently, in the future, jumpsuits, prison jumpsuits are burgundy and fitted, which is nice.
Yes. Cinching that waist, honey. Drag Race had an effect.
Wait, didn't Drag Race start in 2009?
I think so.
Okay, so this episode lines up perfectly with season one of RuPaul's Drag Race. Coincidence?
Yeah.
I think not.
Hair extensions, crispy wigs, soft lighting. I don't know.
Do you know who would totally take down Nathaniel Pratt? And it's RuPaul Charles.
Yes. This poor little girl is hiding her powers. And we're not really sure why at this point. And we learn that Piper has an ex-husband, and we're also not really sure why at this point. And then Prue shows up looking like Paris Hilton if she actually worked a day in her life.
I think Prue looks so good in this episode. I think she looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, she does.
I can't get over the wig.
You don't like the wig?
Oh, no. It needs a little leave-in conditioner, a little...
So there are some close-up moments where her the front of her wig does not look great, but I think overall it's pretty good. I think she looks good as a blonde, and I love that... I guess the thing I love about Prue is that she always has an iconic look no matter what it is. She's walking around in this black leather dress, strapless dress, in heels with her long-ass blonde hair, and she's dressed like that, and she's like, I know, I'll break into a prison.
She's dressed like that to go to work too, which is fantastic. Yeah.
And Prue can do anything. Prue can like wear the most outlandish, non-functional but stylish outfits and just walk around and win all the time because she's a badass witch.
She's wearing those heels this entire goddamn episode, and I don't know how. But Phoebe has apparently murdered a man, is what we discover in this next scene where they go back inside. And
they tried to time travel to 2 weeks before she died to figure out what happened. And instead they have time traveled to the day that she's going to die.
Yeah, because the elders were like, I don't think so. And they just like nabbed
her. Which is exactly why they should not have cast that spell half-assed.
Phoebe no!
spell, and she finds herself about to be killed while locked in a cell.
Which goes into the entire like theme of this show that we talked about in episode one, witchcraft equals death. You do a spell, you die.
You die. So Nathaniel Pratt, who we've already talked about at length, shows up to visit Phoebe in jail, and he's our antagonist of the episode. And as you both have said, he just comes off very white Republican asshole.
Yeah, I just like... The stuff that he's saying when he's on TV is so similar to the anti-LGBTQ rhetoric that's being spewed right now.
I think it's the anti-minority rhetoric in general. The way he talks about witches sounds like the way they talk about queer people. It sounds like the way they talk about immigrants. It sounds like the way they talk about black people in America. It sounds like the way they talk about poor people, homeless people in America. Just the openly vilifying of human beings and using language that basically strips them of their humanity so you feel like it's okay. That's who this guy is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's dehumanizing. It's completely dehumanizing. And yeah, you could just plug in whoever the current other is that they're focusing on.
And like we said, that's witchcraft, right? Like witchcraft is the other. I mean, that's not what we're supposed to take away from this episode by the end of it, but that's what it gives me. And it makes me like angry.
Yeah. It's creepy and gross. It's not cute.
They go upstairs to look for the book and it's not there. And Prue's telekinesis is in fucking sane.
So this is the scene that I love the most. Prue gets angry and just waves her hand as a gesture, but it activates her powers. And her telekinesis destroys the attic. It creates this, like, there's almost like a light. Like, this almost like orangish light that comes out of her hand or like a wave. And it just throws and destroys everything.
How do they... fixing this attic. I want to know who the repair bills on the manor have to be installed.
What kind of insurance do they have?
And how did the neighbors not notice?
It's such a cool shot because it looks like not only is she throwing things, but she's like destroying these things as she throws them.
Yeah, it was a cool effect.
Like you have to imagine what would happen if she just did that to a demon. Like I feel like they would just be dead.
Well, that's, future Prue.
I think this is one of the best special effects they ever do. And it's because it's so practical, because this was not CGI in any way. Like, this was all completely 100% real. They tied everything in the attic to a truck that was on the other side of the wall. And then when Prue waves her hand, they have the truck drive as fast as it can and pull everything into
the wall. Oh my god, really?
So that's how they made that shot. And I think that this is like way skipping ahead. There's an episode in season 7 where Wyatt is back from the future and he kind of can do the same thing that Prue does right here. Like he just has these like overwhelming telekinetic powers. I feel like maybe he inherited that from his Aunt Prue.
Well, he also is like just stupid powerful. Like stupid powerful.
Yeah, almost as powerful as Prue.
I would say he is more powerful than Prue.
Nobody is that. Except maybe Shax.
Shax is.
But nobody else.
I refuse to believe that Prue is the best. I do not think that she is.
I do.
She dies. Anyway.
Imagine if she had lasted 5 more seasons and they kept advancing her powers. She could do anything.
She would have blown up the studio. It would have been a mess.
So, but I guess the point is that they find a key to Prue's safe at work.
Yes.
Because she destroyed the attic.
Conveniently, the podium did not get destroyed. It just fell over.
It didn't go out the window.
This is just an extension of the Book of Shadows being useless.
Like, yeah.
It's not where they need it. It doesn't have the spell they want in it. What is the point?
Who knows why they
book
have it.
Book sucks.
So we see Phoebe in prison in her fantastic jumpsuit. We can kind of skip over that because we know where she's at. We know what she did. And we know what she's doing. But apparently there are witch hunters in the future. And that's really scary.
Yeah.
Witch
hunters now, aren't there?
I mean, yeah, there are witch hunters still, like actual ones in other countries. Yeah. So sure. Saudi Arabia has witch hunters in the present.
Yeah. It's I mean, this is just like, it's my worst fear, is just being hunted by Piper and Prue outside. And Prue has this like fantastic power, right? Where she can blow shit up with the wave of her hand. And basically Piper's power just got louder. Like the sound effect is louder. And this lady comes outside because she still can't freeze anything outside of the room she's in. And she goes, witch, witch, witch. over and over again until
why didn't Prue blow her up when she started screaming weech?
They just I love that they just stand there and Piper pretends that she can freeze the entire outside world, but she can't just also freeze that one woman who's yelling at her.
Shut the fuck up. Shut up, man. It'd be great.
You know, that's a power. When I was watching this episode with David, the last time I watched it, he said something. He said, so where does her power end exactly? She froze all of outdoors. Is just the entire outside world frozen? Or is there a point at which her power stops and like a person who's not frozen would have to interact with people who are? You know, like, where does it end?
Radius? Is it like 100-foot radius or 100-yard radius?
Like, yeah, but even still, like, someone's going to be on the edge of that and be frozen, and someone's going to walk up next to them and be like, what the fuck?
That woman who, you know, screamed weech came out of the building, so...
Yeah, so that's like, how big is her power, and in what radius are people all around her discovering that she's a witch?
Who fucking knows?
Because I think we see that in future episodes too, right? Where they're outside and Piper will freeze like very large swaths of people and stuff, right?
Yeah, and it's like, what if somebody turns around the corner? What if someone like, what if someone walks outside like this? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. The scene where Leo is underground expositioning after the weech scene is really sad. I just feel like this could be a whole show by itself. Like Fort Salem without all of the like military rhetoric.
I think this would be an interesting show all by itself, but it would probably be pretty difficult. I think, I don't know. It would be a great metaphor for sure. But almost every show with witches has some kind of witch hunting thing going on at least once. You may have noticed some ads popping up in the episode, and that's a sign that the podcast is doing well, thanks to listeners like you. But here at WBR, it is our goal that as many of our ads as possible are just as enjoyable as the rest of the show. And so we give you our first Fundamental Magic ad, live recorded with Beth right now.
Have you ever wanted to be a witch with candles? I like candles, but not too many.
Yeah, I'm like... Have you ever wanted a candle that had, like, a whole bunch of stuff in it? Like a book? Like keys? Like just a bunch of stuff?
What in the fuck? Oh my goddess. Tell me you two gay witch bitches aren't messing up the Fundamental Magic ad because you're too fucking high.
No.
This is ridiculous. I did not build up a brand new business after watching my old one fall apart during COVID just to have the two of you destroy my image on your trashy, trashy podcast.
Well, Beth, we were just trying to tell our listeners that your candles smell so good and they should buy so many because Fundamental Magic is the candle shop for witches. And all their candles are handmade by a real witch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what we were saying.
Well, thank you, Phoenix, for repeating back to me the lines that I wrote for you. At least you got them right this time.
God, Beth, you're so feral today. I was just trying to tell our listeners that, you know, fundamental magic candles are pretty. The basic ones come in cute little black and purple jars, and then you have these highly decorative, like, works of art. Candles poured in cauldrons with witchy paraphernalia and crystals on top.
Well, thank you for finally describing the product correctly, Siren. This is an ad after all, an ad that you told me that you could write.
You're welcome.
Well, okay, I guess it's up to me. Hey there, WBR listeners. I'm Beth Wade. And for some reason, I've decided to partner my independently owned and operated company, Fundamental Magic, with these two idiots. I've been putting the craft in witchcraft since 2008, but after the pandemic changed the world as we know it, I knew it was time to answer the call of my art and start this candle-making business. Remember, every Fundamental Magic candle is infused with my own personal magic touch and empowered with fragrances brewed by me to invoke all the feelings of being a badass witch.
In all seriousness, Phoenix and I have always believed in the value of community among witches, and we will take every chance we get to partner with other witches running small businesses. We believe that both witchcraft and podcasting are best when owned and controlled by the original content creators. And that is why we are so excited to bring you this special offer from Fundamental Magic.
WBR listeners get a 15% discount on their first purchase of Fundamental Magic products if they use our affiliate link, fundamentalmagic.com/witchbitches. And you'll find our link in the show notes. Be sure to explore the beautiful online store after the episode and see how Fundamental Magic candles can light the flame of enchantment in your life.
Well, thanks, guys. I knew you weren't totally worthless.
So Buckland's is a madhouse, and it's a cunt muffin, and the spell isn't in the book anymore. Like I said, the book is worthless.
Yeah, this whole scene is, like, really chaotic, with Prue being, like, Donald Trump Jr. and, like, laying off a bunch of people. Yeah.
Basically, she really is. This whole scene exists to say that Prue has, like, ruined her own life by chasing success.
Yeah, by being a workaholic bitch.
Which, I mean, it sort of is. Like, we've seen all of this from her. Sure. This is kind of a manifestation of all her fears. But in this episode, she has to live in what that looks like.
I want to know what kind of auction house, though, is so busy that they have to swarm her when she gets off the elevator.
So there is something that she says. She says that she owns Buckland's and three others, Paris, Tokyo, and
London.
Yes. But so even though she owns all four of those, she still has the same office that she had when she was first hired.
Yeah, and her assistant seems like a real fucking sycophant, and she's very like, I'm her personal assistant. Like, she's very...
Honestly, her assistant seems fucking great. Her assistant seems like she is adept at keeping people the fuck away from her and memorizing everything she says. Well, so I think Anne is great at her
job. She's great at her job, but I think she has stalker potential.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100. I think we're led to believe that Anne is like the closest friend that Prue has, and it's just her sycophant worshipping bitch assistant. Yeah.
Although I wouldn't mind one of those. I wouldn't mind. You know, I've always said I need a house boy, so I would take a house girl too. So that would be fine. I would take an Anne.
I would take Anne. I would love it if Anne followed me around work and like wouldn't let people speak to me.
Yes.
So
Siren will meet with all of you after lunch.
Oh, Siren's gone home for the day. Sorry.
No, Siren's not available. Yes, I will tell him that you called yet again.
So flash forward a little bit to, or maybe at the same time as when they go get to get the book. I don't know. Charmed is bad at time, but at the jailhouse rock.
Leo has led them to believe that he's going to rescue Phoebe.
Yeah, that was really shitty of him to like get their hopes up like that.
Because Leo is a sneaky, shady, behind their back son of a bitch.
Yes.
Oh, and he's that girl's father.
Oh, yeah. But instead of rescuing Phoebe, he just tells her how big a piece of shit she is.
Right!
Basically.
And shows her, like, fucking bug-zapping this baseball guy's noggin.
Yeah, so the one thing he does that I think is cool is he makes Phoebe have a premonition about how she killed Cal Green.
Yeah.
I want to know why. I actually Googled Cal Green to see, is this a real person? Because it sounds like...
Well, there's no way.
It sounds like a baseball player name.
It does. It's totally believable. But there's no way that could be.
No, it's not a real person. The only thing I found was stuff about Charmed. And I'm like, okay, but then it just seems so random and weird and, pun intended, out of left field that they would have this person just be this baseball player?
Yeah, it doesn't make any fucking sense. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I guess it was a way to get him on the television so that Phoebe could see it, have her premonition.
I just thought it was weird and, you know, but then again, this episode is written and directed by men, so who knows? You know how.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's good that he is an athlete. I think we have a lot to talk about
there. Well, yes.
But in this scene, we learn what is the morality play,
right?
Is what we're being told here.
Right.
So the story is that Cal Green is a woman beating piece of shit, and he beat one of Phoebe's best friends to death. He did not face any kind of punishment from the justice system for doing this, which is why Phoebe felt that she had to use witchcraft to take justice into her own hands. And I can't argue.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like,
in any way,
I don't think Phoebe was in the wrong.
So many things at play here. I think this story is really real. I'm sorry, men get away with murdering women all the fucking
constantly.
Time,
especially white guys.
If not murdering, then beating them up and raping them. Men get away with that all the fucking time,
and especially athletes. I mean, they're revered. So like the stuff that's coming out now, like people are talking about it now, and it's more in the news. But obviously, this was something that was happening. When was this episode filmed? 2000? I mean, 20 years ago? 20 plus years ago?
It was 1999.
Yeah, people just weren't talking about it, I guess. I don't know. But it was still happening. And so maybe this was a way to, like, comment on that. I'm not sure what it was. But yeah, definitely.
I think that the story is realistic and important, but the conclusion reached by this atrocity is just completely incorrect.
Yeah.
To me, I think when you're in a situation with someone like Cal Green, who's literally facing no consequences for murdering someone because he's a sexist piece of shit, I think it's perfectly acceptable to use witchcraft to seek justice against a person like that. I think that that is a big part of the origin of what witchcraft is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that when the physical and mundane world absolutely fails to deliver justice, that witchcraft is a great option for oppressed people.
Yeah, it's a way to go outside the system that you're stuck in and take matters into your own
hands. It's a way to make yourself feel less helpless.
Yes, it's empowering. Witchcraft can be really, really empowering for people that feel, you know, disenfranchised. That's the word. So if you feel disenfranchised, witchcraft can be a way for you to feel empowered and that you can take control of the situation. And you know what? If I could zap somebody's brain, I probably would have done the same thing.
The way that Phoebe kills him is cool.
It is.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool because she uses like two of her future powers that she hasn't even had written into the script yet in this premonition. I think that season 8 Phoebe probably actually could do this if she wanted to, because she levitates first of all, and when she like gets into it, she like, it looks like she like electrocutes his brain, but I really feel like she's like reaching out with her empathy power and just like scrambling his head.
Yeah.
I feel like it's an extension of her empathy.
Empath Phoebe is god tier. Like, she just can do whatever the fuck she wants. So,
and it's so interesting.
So I think the way that she killed him is really cool. And at no point watching Phoebe kill this guy did I think, yeah, that was wrong, Phoebe.
No, not at all.
And I was like, oh no, we were just told that he murdered a woman and got away with it.
Yeah.
I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Kill him.
I would do the same thing. And I think it's so cool because, you know, especially in this season, you know, because, and Phoebe even says it in this episode, like, no, my power is passive. But then in the end, her power is badass.
She is going to be flying by the end of the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As it evolves and grows, it's pretty badass.
And I mean, Alyssa Milano is doing a fantastic fucking job. I can't sing her praises enough because she is just amazing. So back at the manor, Prue and Piper are going through the book, and there are some cool ass spells in there. The fucking return spell that they said wasn't there, that's in there.
For example.
For example. But like, they have a spell to create money. I want that.
Yes.
They have
some of this stuff is like, well, actually, this is all pretty evil, but some of this is, like, actual witchcraft. The spell to create money, the spell to bind. There's real spells like that. Why is a spell to, like, have money evil? Exactly.
Money is the root of all evil.
Well, I think it's almost like you quote unquote gained it unfairly if you used magic, as though like exploiting thousands of like low wage workers is more fair than using magic.
Right. Like the owners of Walmart, like that's, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
There is, I mean, and it's obviously more intensely stratified now than it was even then. But even back then, like, we obviously had a class hierarchy and, like, people acting with very different levels of economic privilege. So, I don't know. Although, also, I don't know why Prue needs a spell to make money.
I guess it's, like, so that Phoebe can continue to make money while she's on the run.
Hmm. Okay.
But Prue can just give Phoebe money. She owns 4 auction houses. Like, she could just give her the money.
She probably even has her own launderer. I mean...
But all of these spells are really cool, and we could do a full misspelled on them.
The only one of them they actually use is to create a door, which I think is both cool and stupid.
It looks like a bad video game effect.
Wasn't Piper going to use the binding to bind her daughter?
Oh, yeah, she was.
Oh, yeah, she was. She was gonna, bind her daughter's powers so she couldn't use them. That comes up a lot in this show, the concept of binding your children's magic for their protection. They talk about it all the time.
It's, it's not cool.
So let's just jump right into the end of the episode here. Piper and Prue decide that they're gonna go bust Phoebe out. Leo tries to stop them, like, for a nanosecond, but Piper uses her extra loud power to freeze him.
Leo shows up and he's like, hey, I said I would break Phoebe out of jail, but I didn't. And also, I'm taking the kid.
I'm taking the dog, dumbass.
You know what? Okay, can we rewind a second, though? Because I was not properly pissed at Leo when they were in the sewers or underground or whatever. Because... Uh-huh. This is what happens. Prue and Piper are like, Leo, we're from the past. We did a spell to come to the future. And Leo is like, you are absolutely making that up. I don't know why you're lying to me. I don't believe you. Oh, you're going to remind me about that time where I opened the book to a spell that sent you to the future, that thing that I did and I remember doing. Leo's so stupid. I don't know what his deal is. He's like, oh, something magic is happening? Well, that is so hard for me to believe.
Well, it's not good for the plot if he believes them, I guess. I don't know.
So they go to bust Phoebe out. They use the to make a door spell. When you find your path is blocked, all you have to do is knock. Yeah, it looks like a video game door opening. Like, from an old Zelda game or something?
It does, but honestly, for what they had, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, considering that they did that, they burnt Phoebe at the stake, they had Prue throw around the entire attic, they froze the largest set they'd ever froze before. This episode has a lot of good effects.
They get to Phoebe, who's about to be, like, burned the fuck up.
She is en route to execution while they're trying to rescue her.
Yeah, it is just... The tensions are high. Nathaniel Pratt says, I love the smell of burnt witch in the morning. And to that I say, me too, because it means I'm stoned.
Hell yeah, that's what I did this morning.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so Mike Pence is like just real stoked that he's going to get to kill this woman.
Can we just talk about the whole burning of witches trope and how it bothers me because at least in America, again, you know, they didn't burn witches here, but... it's really
Phoebe Halliwell is the first witch to be burnt in America.
Right. I mean, they burned them in Scotland was really the only place that people that were accused of witchcraft were burned. And I did a little bit of research on this. So of all of the people that were accused of witchcraft in Europe during that time, about only 25% of those people accused were actually executed. And a majority of those people were hung, and the ones that were burned were generally burned after they were already hung, so after they were dead.
I see.
And none of them were witches. Like, that's the thing, too. It's, you know, so, like, when I see people with the, you know, we're the granddaughters of the witches.
You couldn't burn. Maybe if your grandmother was from this specific time period in Scotland, but otherwise, probably not.
Right. I'm like, please... I know it's a cute t-shirt or mug, but please stop it. Because, like, I'm a little bit of a stickler for historical accuracy. And
I like that you brought that up. I've always thought that the phrase, we're the granddaughters of the witches you couldn't burn, was always, it's just sort of, like, trite and stupid and silly. I guess mostly because there's no way that it's true. But also, like, what a dumb way to make yourself feel special.
Yeah.
Your point is ultimately the most important one, which is that it is not historically accurate.
Yeah, no, it's not a part of our history.
So why do we latch on to the image of a witch being burned at the stake? It's repeated in media a lot.
Because of the drama, Siren, the drama.
Well, and honestly, it's another reason I do like this episode, because when they do burn Phoebe at the stake, it's a really great shot, and she does great in it.
I mean, that makes me, that whole setup that they have in there made me super uncomfortable, because I couldn't even imagine the pain, like the physical pain of being burned alive.
It gives gas chamber vibes for sure.
It does.
But also, like, how is, like, Nathaniel Pratt is, like, in the room with her?
In the room, right.
And he's just going to smell all of that.
He's going to singe his beautiful eyebrows.
And I feel like if he's, that room is very small. So that room is going to be a million degrees.
Yeah.
It's going to be gross. Hot. It's going to smell like burning flesh and eventually... Mm-hmm. Shit.
So basically, we just see Alyssa Milano enveloped in CGI flame, but an actual body burning is hideous.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Watching someone burn to death alive would be hideous, excruciating, horrible. I can't imagine you could watch it without throwing up unless you had something in your head telling you that this bitch deserved it.
As Phoebe is burning, the look on Holly Marie Combs' face, that just agony of watching her sister die, like, I believed it. It was intense. The final scene is intense.
We've skipped ahead from a very important point, which is what happens when Prue and Piper bust in and do try to rescue her. Prue's first instinct is to kill Nathaniel Pratt.
Because she's a murderer.
Here's the thing. Prue is a murderer, but I agree with her too.
I agree with her as well, yes.
Because Nathaniel Pratt is, he's just another arm of the patriarchy. If a woman or a minority or a witch or a queer person or a person of color actually dares to stand up for themselves and get their own justice for the awful treatment that they have faced at the hands of evil abusers, if someone like that actually tries to stand up and defend their life, then there are government assholes like Nathaniel Pratt who say, no, this too will be punished. Resisting your oppression will result in punishment. That's what he is there for. I don't think that Prue should have, like, killed him in front of all of those people, because, like, honey, that's how we got here in the first place.
Right. Wasn't it being broadcast on TV that would have caused problems?
It was. It was.
Yeah.
I'm saving the... So Piper can just freeze all of these people in their homes?
Through the TV.
Through the TV.
We do know that magic works through phone lines, as we just discovered.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know. So Phoebe eventually comes to the conclusion that she must be burned at the stake to pay for her crimes. And I do want to insert a little sound clip of Alyssa Milano, because she is phenomenal.
We are not leaving here without you. Prue, we were sent here for a reason. Maybe not to stop this, like what we thought, but maybe to understand why this has to happen. Why you have to let this happen? I don't want to die, but I don't want you to die because of me.
So Phoebe burns, and it's just, it's really a lot. Prue and Piper are hugging each other, and then Phoebe lets out this blood-curdling scream, and we are transported automatically back to the present.
So, yeah, so now they're back in the present, past, present. And
yes!
Piper and Prue are there. They're in the front room of the manor, and they don't know where Phoebe is. And Phoebe, she comes in, and they're all back in their heavy makeup and bad self tanners. And, you know, they, of course, they're all lovey-dovey, huggy, you know, and they talk about how they've got to make some changes in their lives because they've had this glimpse of their future selves, and they don't necessarily want to end up where they were. So they're going to make some changes. And Prue signals that by taking the day off of work to spend it with her sisters, which is sweet. So let me kind of wrap it all up from there in a little cheesy, campy.
But wait, what? Dog shit guy.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Dog shit guy reappears.
Dog shit Mike Pence comes along and they're like, oh, there's that dog again and that man and
let's
the dog. And
they run to him the up again.
They run to the window and they're going to do it again, but they stop themselves because, you know, butterfly effect, all that kind of stuff, you know, like this is the event that set us onto the path that we saw the conclusion of. So let's not do that. And of course that harkens back to the whole personal gain bullshit, whatever. I mean, what's the point of practicing witchcraft if you don't get anything out of it?
Our powers are meant to protect the innocent, not punish the guilty. Bullshit.
I feel like, yes, like throwing dog shit on that man's shoes could escalate into them using their magic against other people whenever they want and making Phoebe feel like she's entitled to kill someone. I understand that flow, but it's not equivalent. It's not like punishing a guy for letting his dog poop in front of your house. Like, that's a little petty. Punishing a guy who beat your best friend to death is not petty.
Right. Well, I think what they're trying to insinuate there is like it starts with the little thing and then it just, you become okay with the little thing and then the next thing's a little bit bigger and you become okay with, you know, so it's like this sort of ripple effect. But to me, it kind of goes back to like slasher films, right? Where who are the people that get killed in the slasher films? It's the kids having sex and smoking pot and drinking alcohol, right? Like they're being punished for these little things that are pretty.
Yeah, it's just, it's a really straightforward message that we're getting here about what it means to practice witchcraft, and I disagree with it.
But who is Dog Shit Guy?
Dog Shit Guy is Nathaniel Pratt.
That's right, he turns around.
And then they're like, oh, so because that one time we threw shit on his shoes, that's why he grew up to be a witch hunter.
That's right, that's how we ended up burning Phoebe up. Sure.
And so then it's almost like it's their fault. Like the fact that he's a murdering witch hunter was their fault.
Oh, yeah. Victim blaming. Perfect. Patriarchal perfection.
The overall message of this episode is that good witchcraft is only allowed to be used in certain ways. Violence with magic can only be used against demons and warlocks, but not evil humans. Maybe magical violence can only be used against creatures that also have magic. Like, maybe that's what makes it fair. But I fundamentally disagree with the lesson imparted by this episode. And I think ultimately the elders created the quote-unquote future as a giant mindfuck to control them. That's my feeling. Because the elders control everything. The elders, I'm pretty sure, give Phoebe her premonition, so nice with a date stamped on it. The elders give them the spell to go to the future, and the elders decide when they're allowed to come back.
Okay, yeah.
The elders controlled all of this. We have no idea if they actually did travel to the future, or if the elders just tricked them into...
Oh, if it was all in their heads.
Yeah, something where they taught them the lesson they wanted them to get.
That they deserve.
Is Nathaniel Pratt actually going to be like an angry politician, or did the elders just use his face because that was the human they had picked on that day?
You know, I'm not usually into conspiracy theories, but this is a conspiracy theory.
I know. And did the elders just use Cal Green because Phoebe saw him on TV?
Oh,
I think
shit.
I think the whole thing is like a fucking simulation or something meant to control them and teach them a lesson. Because the elders drop down the hammer of control on them all the time. And it's a theme that is going to build from this point onward.
Yeah, fuck the elders, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, fuck the sky doorbells.
Fuck those sky doorbells. I never thought about it before, but it makes so much more sense than, like, what is presented to us in the episode.
The moral of the episode, I guess it boils down to, like, don't use magic. Magic is to protect the innocent, not punish the guilty. Which is also bullshit. They say that a lot, but they, like, just kill demons whenever they feel like it.
That's a murderer!
Yeah, they kill living creatures.
Right.
All the time.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying they do it. So I think it's weird to draw a line here. At one point, Paige kills a witch who is just doing annoying curses. But a man who beats a woman to death with his bare hands, he doesn't deserve to be vanquished with magic. What's the difference?
Straight white guys have a different justice system than the
Well, of course they do. Of course they do. And I know that. And I see that in the episode. I just don't like the universe of Charmed telling me that it's okay.
They are most precious and need to be protected at all costs.
Well, they are very fragile.
They are.
So speaking of privileged asshole white men.
Yes.
I think a lot of witches would not agree with killing Cal Green, but that being said, I think a larger percentage of witches out there would be okay with using magic to punish him. I really do. Mm-hmm. Because he has been freed from consequences by an institution that promises to bring justice. And this is the history of hexing in a nutshell. Powerful people are protected by the system even when they do obvious evil. And if you, the victim, or the victim's only avenger, do not have the same social or physical power as your oppressor, then using witchcraft to exact justice just makes sense. It just makes sense.
I mean, agreed. 100%.
And I feel like all of the people who say that witchcraft is not to be used this way have never found themselves in this kind of situation. And that is also privileged.
Those are the love and light, new agey witches that can fuck off.
I'm not saying it's everyone. I'm sure there are people who've been through a lot of shit and still choose peace, and I have nothing but respect for them, but I'm not going to listen to the advice of someone who hasn't lived my fucking life and has had both of their parents taking care of them for 30 years and has never faced employment discrimination, who's never been sexually assaulted, who has never, like, been kicked out of their house. I don't care about your opinions on how I defend myself. I don't care.
You know, witches that live in glass cauldrons should not throw stones.
Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, also pretty.
pretty. I don't have anything to add to that. I mean, my basic, like, opinion of the message of this episode is it's stupid.
I really wanted to, like, spell it out, and I'm not done. I just really want to spell out all of the problems with what they're saying and even use, like, real world examples to show why it sucks, I guess.
The moral of the episode and the subtext does come from a very privileged place.
Yeah.
A very privileged place.
But, you know, so I see a lot of morality plays do involve, Phoebe's friend here is kind of the woman in the refrigerator. When you have a situation where a powerful man, like, beat up, murdered, raped, whatever, a woman, and I'm being asked to examine whether or not it's ethical to kill him or attack him or hurt him, like, the answer is always, who fucking cares? He has to be dealt with. It doesn't fucking matter if it's right or wrong. He's going to keep doing this until he is stopped. That's where I am.
Not to like, keep bringing up this person when it's been so, like, subversive in the media, but, like, think about, like, Jeffrey Dahmer. He would have kept doing what he was doing if no one had gotten away from him and stopped him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know? And, like, he was murdered in prison by another inmate, and, like, good.
He should have been. But, you know, I feel like also these labels we put on people have a big effect on that. So, like, Jeffrey Dahmer is a rapist and serial killer. That's how we often think of him. What are we told about Cal Green all the time? He's a baseball player.
He's a baseball player. Yeah.
So these labels we put on people also affect, like, whether or not it's okay to do violence against them. It's no different than saying, oh, Cal Green was a baseball player, but Inspector Rodriguez was a warlock, and that's why he deserved to die. Okay, so I will wrap it up. I wanted to use a real-life example that I think parallels this episode. A lot of you listening have probably heard of Centoya Brown Long. She was 16 years old when she murdered a pedophile who was attempting to rape her while she was caught in a sex trafficking ring. That is horrific. Her life, she was being horribly abused by men way more powerful than her. And she finally fought back and she killed someone who was trying to rape her. Good for her. Do I see a problem with that? No. Do you guys see a problem with that?
No.
No. Not at all.
She did this when she was 16. And I feel like anybody who's listening should be able to empathize with this person. But she was given by a court and a judge life imprisonment because she killed this person. Because she killed a pedophile rapist. She needs life in prison? Really? This is just one real world example, but I think we all know from, like, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell and what's his face who didn't kill himself?
Epstein.
You know, I think we know from them that pedophiles at high levels of celebrity and government have been getting away with sexually assaulting people for years. And meanwhile, someone like Santoya gets sent to prison for defending herself from that kind of abuse. Where is the justice here? Mm-hmm. There is no justice in a system that allows these things. So why on earth could it possibly be wrong to use witchcraft to attempt to intervene on behalf of someone like Santoya, who was so thoroughly denied justice by traditional means? I think that this episode would say that that is wrong, and I don't agree.
I don't agree either.
Yeah. I think that witchcraft exists to empower the powerless and to suggest that we can't use it to make things better for those that have been wronged. I just, to me, goes against the essence of what witchcraft is for.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. The very existence of witchcraft as a practice is to be subversive. So if you take that away, then what are you, you're play pretending. What are you doing?
Okay. So we experienced a lot in this episode. We all have lots of thoughts and feelings about it. Nobody died, but I think that my kill of the day is Nathaniel Pratt's shoes.
Oh yeah. That's better. Yeah. Fuck his shoes.
Fuck his shoes.
My kill of the day is Prue's future self, who would have been walking around looking like Paris Hilton, fabulous, with all the power in her fingers to murder anybody that she wanted while being super rich and cold-hearted. I think that's a great character.
Oh, wait, I got another kill of the day. I think this is a better one. Use this one instead. My kill of the day is the woman who screamed weeches.
Yeah, I hope we never have to see that bitch again.
You know, the elders also just invented that woman. They were like, hey, what if we put a white woman down there? And she's like, witch!
If I were going to rate this episode, I would rate it stupid.
Oh, well.
I love this episode. I think it's a great episode, but I just think that the moral that they're trying to achieve is really dumb. So,
I mean, you can't really get past that.
If I were to rate this episode, I would rate it as, what fucking time is it?
Who knows? Is it the past? Yeah. Is it the present? Is it the future? It's witches of future past.
It's all the same. Of present, future, past.
Past, present, participle.
Yeah. If I had to rate this episode, forget it. I think I talked enough. You know how I feel.
Thank God. All right, Beth, where can the people find you?
Oh, you can find me on all the socials at fundamental_magic with a K. You can also visit the website at any time, fundamentalmagic.com. And you can shoot me a message through the website. You can shoot me a message through the socials if you have any questions. If you need any custom candles, let me know.
All right, Siren, what about your talkative ass?
Yeah, I guess if you really want, you can follow me at Siren Spectacular on Instagram and Twitter, and Siren Spectacular Non-Binary Meme Witch on Facebook.
You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. You can follow me on Twitter at @PhoenixArcana_. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast on all social media platforms. If you have a question, a comment, or something you'd like to hear us talk about, please send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com, you stupid bitches.
All right, all you morally compromised witches with desolate futures.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And bitching.
Bye.
To see the future. To see glimpses of the future in your dreams, gather the following ingredients.
A sachet of purple cloth, which you have placed the following herbs. Lavender, mugwort, rose, jasmine, and chamomile.
A local small business occult shop is a great place to obtain a satchel if you are unable to sew one yourself. A new moon or a Monday is an auspicious time to cast this spell.
Incant the following couplet over your psychic dream pouch, then keep the sachet under your pillow or near you when you sleep.
Psychic charm and intuitive wonder, herbs blessed with the gift of prophecy, grant me visions while I slumber. Prepare me for what is to be.
And here's your bonus spell that was supposed to appear on season 2, episode 1. Oops.
To bless and protect your personal grimoire or book of shadows, write the following on the first page. A full moon or a Saturday are auspicious days to cast this spell.
Magic spells and charms and rites, wisdom passed down through the ages, arcane lore and modern light, gather strength within these pages.
Alchemize the magic that is my own with divine inspiration far beyond. Within this tome shall be sown power sacred, wild, and strong.
May you who trespass on this text feel the bane of all holy hell. But to you who inherits this book next, may magic keep you safe and well.
Shadows cast between light and dark, dearest secrets and wildest spells, sacred science, poetry, and art. Here the might of the witches dwell.
Sign your magical, chosen, or given name to seal the spell and bind the book to you.